Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the VF1 show, Suzuka edition, kind of. This is your host, Vincenzo Landino, co-host Vincenzo Landino. I always say host first and I forget. Wait a minute. I've got my co-host here on the other side. Oh, there's her laugh. How are you, V?
You know, it's just in that part of the F1 schedule right now where I don't know what time it is because I'm up fairly late and then I get up late and then my day starts late and then it's just weird. And can we get on normal scheduling? How are you?
You know, really, really good. And every time I keep thinking to myself, like, oh, we're back to kind of a normal, like you said, schedule with the Formula One calendar and regular schedule with the Formula One calendar is like early morning Sundays. And I'm like, wait a minute, yeah. It is early morning Sunday, but it's like 2 a.m. early morning Sunday. I was so exhausted trying to watch qualifying this morning. I fell asleep, woke up to Max, Checo, and Norris. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I know what happened now, but I didn't get to see it, right?
Yeah.
And I did end up watching it afterwards. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, parent life and all this other stuff, I just have been more exhausted. Now I think I know what more Americans that were watching the sport before that, you know, already had kids and stuff have probably gone through where they're like, this is why I don't watch. I have a guy in my office. He has kids and stuff like that. And he records everything. And I'm just like, oh, no, I got to watch it in real time. And I'm like, I can't stay awake for this. I can't stay awake for this anymore. Yeah. I just want to get back to I want to get to the European calendar so that we can start getting back to those, like, at least normal to us, right? East Coast, U.S.
I think there's something kind of nostalgic in a way. Just waking up early on a Sunday morning and you go out and get breakfast, you get your coffee, you just kind of snuggle and watch the race. And just that's like the start of your day. And by the time the race is over, it's maybe like 8:30, 9 o'clock. You're good to go, depending on where you live. You're good to go for the rest of the day and you're up. And that's that. And then when you've got these races, like the ones we've had where we're up late at night and then it messes up our sleep the next day, it's like, that's not the vibe of F1. And all these people who are saying that, like, oh, Formula One doesn't cater to the American audience, you guys are just upset. Like, we're not trying to like have any sport cater to us. We don't care. But just these couple of races, it's a gauntlet no matter where you live. We're all in this commiseration together, except if you're at local time.
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, It's all good. This is still one of my, this is definitely a top five track for me anyway. So I love Suzuka. Yeah. It's just usually in October-ish.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm trying to think, like, it was on my birthday the first year I started watching Formula One. It was, it was October 21st, 1990. It was the Senna Prost crash in turn one. Mm. Piquet, Moreno were the last time we saw a Brazilian 1-2 on the podium. Actually, it might be the last. Oh, man. It was the last Brazilian on the podium at all. Well, anyway, it was a Brazilian 1-2. And that was when Aguri Suzuki podiumed. Finished in third. And it was the one and only podium for Lamborghini V12
I missed that in
Formula One, which is kind of cool. So, like, yeah, I remember that. And it was like, okay, it's always October. Like that's really cool. It's like Coda, right? Same thing. It's always in that October. Actually, now Coda is my birthday weekend every year. Hopefully they don't move that one to April or anything. But
yeah. Oh God.
Although
that might work. I wouldn't mind that. But I will say, with the schedule being the Japanese Grand Prix being in October, I feel like it was less of a maybe sleep disturbance because of American football, where we're up late anyway, where we've got Pac-12 after dark going until maybe, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, depending on where you're at in the world. So at that point, okay, well, let me just split screen Formula One quali or the race. And then I've got football still happening in the US. Yeah. So it's not that much of a, oh, I'm not going to stay up late just to watch a race I can watch tomorrow. It's, you can watch them both because you're up, because you're watching football. Because that's just, that's how our schedule works. So again, we're not asking anyone to cater a schedule to us. It's just kind of weird. So, you know, we're all in the growing pains together. It's totally fine. But yeah, this is a really good track. I love this track.
Yeah,
it's a racing track for sure.
You know, it's one of those that's just there's a ton of history on this track.
Yeah.
So many championships have been decided on this track. Mm-hmm. And it's a great weekend. To me, it's almost a shame that it's so early in the calendar. I understand the sustainability crowds can come out and say, like, it makes more sense to kind of package all of these together and whatever. But I'm still a fan of I'm a fan of a little bit of nostalgia and tradition. And so
same.
This would be an awesome track in a year where the field was closer, or at least there was some more fighting at the top. I mean, maybe we will get some of that today. I think it is kind of funny that we went from Australia, again, a street circuit, to Suzuka, a track, and Red Bull, you know, seems like they're in that domination again. Maybe McLaren might fight them a little bit. The Mercedes looked decent. I don't know if they're going to carry that in race pace.
Yeah.
The Ferraris were okay, but it is interesting to see how that transition from a street back to the track. You know, a lot of high speed corners and Red Bull's right there fighting at the top. So it'll be a fun race tonight or tomorrow morning, technically. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I just hope it's not the exact. I hope the outcome is not what we all think and know it's going to be. MV1, Sergio Perez, and then somebody else. I just don't want to see that. I don't want to see that tonight.
I know.
But
it's, you know what? I will say, I think that Mercedes has definitely unlocked a lot of power in that car, which is good to see. I think, again, being so early in the season, you don't want to see one team run away with it. And we already know what Red Bull's capable of doing. They've been dominant over the last couple of years. We already kind of know that we know that they are the team to beat. We know that Ferrari has looked good. McLaren is definitely improving, but McLaren, I feel like they're in consistent upgrade mode, which I love about McLaren. And they're never so committed to one thing if it keeps not working for them. And that's been Mercedes' problem ever since 2021. It's like, or rather the 2022 season, they're just committed to things that were not working. And they were building on the things that were not working instead of saying we need to bin the entire thing and start from scratch. And it's good to see that we're now just a couple races into the season and Mercedes is already starting to unlock more power. And the fact that they're doing it at a track like Suzuka, which has so much, it really, I think, shows that the W15 has potential, whereas maybe, you know, the last race, we were kind of like, what is this car even doing? So today was, I think, a positive step for Mercedes, which needs it. But I do think that if they're able to perform and compete against Ferrari and McLaren in this race, we're going to potentially see a really, really good season on our hands. Which we talk about the numbers in the sport, maybe we can segue into one of our topics. We talk about the numbers declining, the numbers in viewership. We already saw the declining viewership of Drive to Survive. Are those fans, are those DTS fans kind of, you know, more passive about the sport? Or are they just maybe more interested in the drama? We don't know those details yet. But we do know that people like drama, and drama tends to keep people, you know, interested in what's going on. And so having the drama of having three teams competing with the top team this season, I think that's what the sport needs to continue attracting fans. And that's not on Red Bull. That's not their responsibility. They're not going to power down a little bit to create a little more competition, but it is up to the other teams, whether they're going to make the season interesting and whether they're going to continue this growth trajectory, because the more the sport grows, the more money they make. So it really is a test of their development. And I think we're going to start to see, especially going into the new regulations, which teams are stepping up to the plate and which teams could potentially kind of face a buyout opportunity later on. And I think we're kind of starting to see that now with a few teams who's kind of more serious about the next regulations period and who's kind of maybe just floundering and waiting for an opportunity to get out of the sport. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, a tight title race, right? Or a tight race in general keeps teams having to focus on the current car as long, you know, longer, which is which is good. It also creates a more level-ish playing field the following year, because it's not like, all right, we've got this thing in the bag, or all right, we totally suck, we're just going to start working on the next car. Now, maybe the teams at the bottom should be working on the car, right? But at least at the top, it does to some extent give us let me finish that thought. It does give us more I don't want to say parity when it comes, like, year over year parity. We haven't seen that, obviously, you know, when Red Bull's running away with it in 1 year and they're able to continue to develop the next car earlier, they're going to be that far ahead of everyone else, especially their biggest rivals behind them, who were having to keep developing the car in that, you know, like last year, right? Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, they were all fighting for money and points that mattered a lot.
Yeah.
And so you'd think they're slightly behind. It looks like as of right now. Now, again, you had a Verstappen DNF. Oh, maybe it's a little skewed, but you also had a signs did not start also in one race. So maybe it could be a little closer, right? Maybe like we are seeing a pretty decent cluster at the top. I hope it stays that way. I hope we keep that all year long, or at least for like half the year.
Yeah.
Get to like the, you know, before Spa, if we can go into Spa with like a real race in our hand, like that would be fantastic, right? And hopefully no rain. I think there's definitely a lot that, you know, Formula One, Liberty Media is having to like figure out right now. And you know, the numbers, the viewership numbers have not been good. The US ones have dipped, but we've also had three races that were terrible timing for US audiences, and even global audiences were not great either, with the Saturday races to lead off the year. Then we had Australia, which again puts most of the I don't want to say most of, a lot of the F1 watching world in an awkward viewing slot. We're going to have another one with the next race in China. So we don't get to somewhat of a normal schedule for the big viewing areas until Miami. And that's going to be, is it Miami?
I think it is.
Miami at the end of April. I think that's the Miami. Yeah. So it's the Chinese. Yeah. So it's the Miami Grand Prix, May 5th. It's at 4 p.m. Eastern, which is kind of a prime watching
in the UK.
Yeah, it is a midnight race in the UK, of course. So it's different everywhere, right? But at least it's getting back to somewhat normal, and at least with U.S. viewership, you're gonna have those numbers look a little bit better. Then we go back into Europe, and then we start really the European calendar. But we don't really start that until May. So the middle of May, where we have Emilia-Romagna, Monaco, come back to Canada.
But I also question how many Europeans are even watching Miami. It, obviously, you know, being F1 purists, most of them, they look at that as an expansion that is sacrificing UK legacy tracks. So I often wonder how many people from the UK are actually upset about a midnight race for them, because they're like, I work the next day, I'm going to sleep.
The Miami race, yeah, you're right. I mean, listen, you're not wrong about that. So that while we might see an uptick in US viewers, we'll probably see a downtick in European, then depending on which country, we might see pretty large numbers of going down for that race in, you know, a live viewing. It'll be interesting until we get to, so you've got Imola happening in May. I mean, and that's a 9 a.m. race for us on the East Coast, a little earlier for you over there in the Central Time, but that kind of starts off the season. So now you've got this, let's just call the rest of this preseason. Let's just call everything we've gone up until Miami. Let's call all of that, like, all right, we're just getting into we're just getting into the swing of things. And how do you, you know, how is that beneficial if going into that race or even Monaco, even if we pushed it out to Monaco, right, where things really kick off, the summer kicks off for the Northern Hemisphere, like that's the start of summer for, you know, everywhere, but especially in the US here, it's like the start of our summer, Memorial yeah. Day, and you've got Indy 500, you got all that stuff happening. So let's call Monaco the big day. I mean, going into that race, if someone's clearly far ahead, like how do you keep viewers for the rest of the season with this long of a calendar? You know, it's not like, all right, we've only got 17 races. No, you've got 23. I think you get to the point where the calendar itself is becoming your I don't want to say your enemy.
I'll
really
say enemy.
Yeah, it is, and you've got to fight to keep everything as interesting as the last, right? And especially when we get to Europe, when all of those are, they're close together, right? They're very close, so it's like, are people going to care as much if, like, I don't know, they saw the, let's say, Hungarian GP, and then we've got the Dutch, you know, the Dutch GP. Yeah, okay, the Dutch fans are going to love it, but is anyone else going to care about that if it's not a tight race at that point? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I also think that this is one of those interesting seasons where you've got so much happening in terms of driver contracts. Where are these drivers going to go, and how is it going to affect the racing downstream? I think drivers right now are going to continue to drive full out. I think they understand what's at stake. The better they drive, the better the contracts are going to get. The better the teams are going to be calling them. So I think we're not, and I know that especially from Carlos Sainz's perspective, they would much rather know where their destination is sooner rather than later. But I also feel like the suspense of it too might also be designed for ratings as well. Maybe part of that is going to be, let's not make any moves until maybe midway through the season, so that it keeps people interested if this title race does get out of hand, especially when it comes to that second Red Bull seat. And people have said that I've heard rumors that they've already reached an extension with Checo, but I've also heard people say that there's several other drivers that they're looking at as well, including Carlos Sainz, who's also being linked to Mercedes. So is Seb. I mean, we can go into that too. But I genuinely think that this is a unique season, not even interesting. It's unique, where there are so many free agency opportunities. And I also wonder who's out completely off the grid next year, which rookie drivers are going to come in. And maybe that's where the drama is going to come in later on in the season, when we kind of start to understand, have a better picture of where teams are going to finish, where drivers are going to finish. And right now, I think more of it is about how do we keep fans engaged in the sport? And well, they're keeping fans engaged a lot by talking about that musical chairs of drivers and where drivers are going to end up next year. And silly season is only going to get crazier, because nobody knows except for Lewis Hamilton where anyone's going to end up.
So let's weave in the Seb rumors along with everything else. But you made an excellent, I'm just observing something that you said. Is that really what is that really what Liberty wants to happen, where it's like, we want people, oh wow, let's talk about all these silly season rumors versus actual racing. Now, listen, I also do understand from a perspective of, like, in the NFL or even in European football, you have transfer season, or you have free agency period in the NFL, in the NBA. And it's like, there's a whole economy around those things. Right. Mm-hmm. And it keeps you talking about the NFL, the NBA, champions, Premier League, other European leagues, you know, City A, League One, La Liga, all those transfers, right? There's so much around that. There's shows that talk about it and break down. So yes, that's one way of doing it. There's just not enough of that activity happening in Formula One to be able to have, like, weeks and weeks and weeks dedicated, months dedicated to a transfer period, right? There's there's only 20 drivers, there's only 20 seats. We don't have, yeah. we don't have, you know.
Well, I'm not saying it's that not like that it's going to be like similar to what it is in the NBA.
No, NFL, and I'm at
markets.
My point is though.
Go on.
No, I was going to say my point, like the point I was trying to make is that does Formula One want that to be a focal point versus the racing is really good. I keep coming back to this and like, I know I kind of sound like I'm gatekeeping. And I'm not. It's just like the further you get away from the actual on-track product being the biggest thing that people are talking about.
Yeah.
The further away you get from, you know, having better races, having, you know, tighter, tighter grid, like it changes all of that. Right. Yeah. So go ahead. You were going to say something. Sorry, I cut you off.
Well, again, this is enter the sub rumors, and I understand this isn't Liberty Media. They're doing. I don't think they're out there.
No, putting
thoughts in people's heads. But this is the media doing what it does, though. Do I think that Sebastian Vettel will come out of retirement to drive in Formula One right now? No, I really kind of don't. I think that Seb understands that. I think Seb is humble enough to understand that, yes, I'm as a racing driver, as a world champion, I'm always going to miss being in the car. But at the same time, as a racer, I understand that these are opportunities that I'm taking away from drivers, and I don't want to be that person. So, because he knows of anyone how difficult it is to get a seat in Formula One. So I don't think he is self-absorbed enough to where he would come out of retirement to take a seat from some kid who deserves it, right? Especially a top seat. So, you know, all this to say, this isn't Liberty Media's doing. This is more the media's doing, because what the hell else do you talk about? You know, how many times can you possibly write the same lead over and over and over again? Max Verstappen on pole, Max Verstappen, you know, wins the race. Like, you know, like how many times Logan Sargeant spins out on a turn, blah, 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 wrecks his car. How many times can you say that? So it's like, what can we do as journalists? And I know as my time as a sports journalist, that anytime you would hear any thought, you'd be having a conversation with a colleague and you'd be talking about, oh, well, this head coach could come in to be an offensive coordinator. Oh, yeah, that actually makes perfect sense. And then you start writing about it, and then somebody else picks it up and they start writing about it. And then suddenly, before you know it, it gains steam that, oh, this might actually be happening. And that's how quickly it happens. You know, and this could be zero based off no merit at all, but this is just how it works in sports. And so I guess I'm saying this because if the racing isn't superior, if we're not having just tight battles, you know, I would say this is early enough in the season to where every single car on track matters and where they finish matters. So unless we're having really good racing, I think the media is going to continue to default to the rumors because that's all they're going to have. And right now, because the free agency period is so intense, there's so many seats up for next season that this is kind of where they're going to focus their time, which, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing either, because it does help the drivers in that market, because the drivers know who has the leverage right now too. So this is definitely a driver's market, I think, for the first time in a really long time. So,
yeah, I mean, and we've got, you know, there's rumors. So here's, I mean, the situation is this: you've got a 1 year seat open, potentially. These are all hypotheticals. You've got a 1 year seat open at Red Bull, maybe. Mm-hmm. Right. And I say 1 year because ideally you'd want whoever you sign to be there. The new regulations start in 26. So you'd want someone there for, you know, a longer period of time. So maybe it's not. Maybe you, if the right driver's available, if you're a Red Bull, right, maybe you do sign a three year, you know, someone to 3 years that sits in that seat in 25 to get used to the team. And then you've got them there for at least the first 2 years of the regulation. Mercedes, it seems like, is a 1 year seat because of Kimi Antonelli, the phenom 17-year-old that at least Toto's been, now unless Toto's completely bluffing everybody on this one, he seems like he's really tipping his hand that's the guy he wants in that seat
for sure
come 26. So if the Mercedes seat is a 1 year seat, that's another scenario there. Aston Martin always seems like it's in flux. I think it is in flux because I think Alonso's in his last. I don't know the contract situations off the top of my head. I'd have to look at him. But I think almost like every, it was before Hamilton. So Hamilton, Leclerc are the might be the only two that are fully set and locked in. I think it's there's almost everything else is in flux for the rest of the grid at some either one seat. I can't see a Sainz wanting to do a, just a 1 year kind of prove it. They would call this a prove it deal in the NFL, right? Or in the NBA, or it was like prove yourself and then you'll get a better deal. Like I can't see him wanting to do that with Mercedes. It's like either you're signing me to be your guy or you're
not.
I'm not coming for 1 year.
But that's the thing. Kimi Antonelli, I think, is gauging his next move based off what Toto Wolff does. And obviously Mercedes wants to be competing at the top of the grid. Toto's not going to sign some, you know, some random or somebody who doesn't make sense. He's certainly not going to sign like a Nico Hülkenberg type, no offense to Nico, but you know, he wants to retain Kimi. So he's not going to get there by signing a driver that is going to drive that car well enough to deserve an extension. So that's,
So this puts George in a weird spot, right? Because now if you're George Russell, you're sitting here going, okay, Kimi Antonelli's the guy. I thought I was the guy.
Yeah.
So that's already awkward for George. But also, like, how...
Yeah.
I almost think maybe it could be a Magnussen in that seat at Mercedes. Think about it. If you're a guy like Magnussen, you're like, yeah, absolutely. I want to drive for a decent team, you know, better than where I'm racing now. So let me drive for a decent team. Then whatever. I don't care. It's 1 year. But if you're a guy like we talked about Sainz, are you really going to go there for a year? I don't know. But he may also have plans for Audi for 26. So maybe he doesn't care and he drives for a year.
Yeah.
You've also got Fernando Alonso, who I don't think will be a right fit with George, but that's a very real possibility. Seems like it's a real possibility.
I was listening to one of the shows and somebody said that he sees Nico Hülkenberg potentially going to Audi, that could be a potential good fit for them because it's a driver that understands the sport. He understands how cars work. He can help them develop that car from a veteran's perspective while also having pretty relatively low expectations of Audi's first year. But whereas Sainz wants to win and he wants to win now. Mm-hmm. So they don't see him going to Audi straight away, even with the new regulations. That might be a long term, you know, maybe a couple years down the line. But that Audi could potentially be looking for drivers like maybe the Haas lineup now, drivers who they know they can drive. They just need a better car and help them build that car.
Yeah.
So I think that out of all the things I've heard, that makes the most sense. But I've also heard a scenario wherein if Honda is going to Aston Martin in 2026, Max has had really good success with that Honda engine. Based off that alone, people have said that Verstappen potentially to Aston Martin makes more sense if he's looking to leave Red Bull, that it would be 1 year without that Honda engine. But then when they switch to 2026, if they sign him to a long year deal, that would already be kind of a baked in partnership that they know works. So in terms of, you know, extracting the performance, well, where would that leave Lance Stroll if they decide to keep, or would they decide to keep Stroll and then let Alonso go? I think that out of any rumor of where Max could potentially go, that makes the most sense. I don't know that it happens. I genuinely think that Red Bull, if they can sort their shit out, might be able to keep Max. But again, I look at that engine partnership and I think that's such a significant component to how Max Verstappen drives that car. I don't know where Ford comes into this.
Well, I mean, that's for Red Bull to figure out and their power chains. I mean, we know that the Ford thing is mostly badging with some of the technological components that they're gonna supply or help with their expertise.
Isn't most of that built off Honda's?
Well, I mean, the entire thing is built off Honda, really. Yeah. Like it's
so basically, Ford is basically badging Honda.
Well, they're badging Red Bull powertrains, which Red Bull powertrains is hired a bunch of former Honda. I mean, they still have Honda consultants and whatnot there.
Yeah.
Because that's what they've built. So it, yeah. I mean, that's where you're dealing with. I don't know if I see the Max situation is very interesting.
Yeah.
That's for someone who is.
It's all it is. It's a power play from everyone involved, from Max to the teams, to the engine providers. Yeah. Like it's a power play. It is. And there's a lot of money going to be involved in that. So, but I posted a couple of days ago that I don't, you know, with the Adrian Newey rumor potential too, Aston Martin also, I don't see money being a factor. I don't see money being that thing you could dangle in front of Adrian Newey. He wants a challenge, sure, but that is such a small component to the overall picture of getting from point A to point B, having a car yeah. that is okay to having a car that's extremely successful. And it has taken him a very long time at Red Bull building the right team to build that car to make that happen. So that's a long-term investment. That's not just something that, oh, we're going to go hire the best guy on the grid to come in and do this. And well, we're going to have a championship car overnight. That's not how that works. It takes a really long time to get there. It takes building the right team around that person to get there. So I think that as far as Adrian Newey goes, I think you could dangle a blank check in front of him and he's going to see this as, yes, that blank check is fantastic, but how many years am I going to be losing? And Adrian Newey doesn't like to lose, first and foremost. He likes a challenge, but he doesn't want to lose at the end of the day either. So I think that's the bigger challenge I think that Aston Martin faces right now. But I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of fun to be thought about, right? There's yeah. a lot of, it's definitely, yeah.
And here's the thing too, with other sports, you just have the athlete. Typically the athlete doesn't come with the sponsorships too, right? With Formula One, the driver brings the sponsorships and we've seen this massive, I mean, now it's being rumored that, that Tommy Hilfiger is going to be leaving Mercedes, that they're going to be picking up Adidas. So how does that change the identity of Mercedes, right? Is it going to go from being kind of preppy German high end to, you know, more sporty? Like how is that going to change the identity that we have, that branding identity of Mercedes? So there's so many moving parts in the world of F1 free agency that I think we kind of forget about as fans because we're focusing so much of our attention on the driving itself. But mm-hmm. there's so many more factors that are involved in these moves that we don't really subconsciously think about, but that's the reality of Formula One. There might be free agency moves that make absolutely no sense to us, but they make perfect sense from a marketing perspective. It's exactly why I think Daniel Ricciardo still has a place in Red Bull, even though he's not performing to their expectations right now.
Well, I mean, we know that marketing has become the biggest mm-hmm. benefit or the biggest differentiator. That's the mm-hmm. word I was looking for. That Liberty Media has brought to the table, right?
Yeah.
And it's not shocking. It shouldn't be shocking to anybody that they run this thing like, like a business, like a marketing tool. I would like to see all of this shape out. It would be cool to see where everything goes. It would be great to fully shake up the grid. I mean, let's face it. Who wouldn't want to see a guy at his absolute peak, Max Verstappen, turn around a team like an Aston Martin or, mm-hmm. Partner up with one of his former teammates and Carlos Sainz at Red Bull. Like, there's a lot of storylines and really interesting dynamics that it would bring. The cynic in me says, wow, this really sets up nicely for a revitalization of the Drive to Survive downfall. Like, wow, if all of this happens, Drive to Survive really strikes.
Mm-hmm. Strikes a gold mine.
This gold mine.
Well, because we know,
with all that,
there's so many storylines that they can't use next season, or they won't use last season because, or they won't use this season because of access. So, people think, oh, Drive to Survive is going to be so dramatic this season. Well, it's really not, because it doesn't behoove them to create episodes around the drama at Red Bull. We've talked about this before, but it mm-hmm. does behoove them to create episodes around the drama that is the free agency market. And we have seen those episodes have done really, really well. So people want to know what happened behind the scenes, and they get kind of a glimpse of that during the show. There's oh, that's going to be exciting. I can't wait for next season for that alone. But in the vein of marketing, Liberty Media bought MotoGP.
They did. 86% of it from Dorna yep. Sports.
Yep. So
it's, yeah, go ahead.
That is a big deal. It's been rumored that they could potentially have race weekends alongside each other.
That's the big one right now. Yeah. That's the big thing going around is, will that happen?
Yeah. And I mean, my question is to you, do you think that that is in the best interest of both the series? We know that a lot of MotoGP fans take issue with Formula One. We know Formula One is just like, what's, it's just a bike. It's just two wheels. Like, you know, call us when you can put together enough one. There's a lot of drama between the two fan bases. Not a yeah. lot, but there's enough drama between the two fan bases. Do you think this is good for both series? Do you think this is good for, I think we talk about race revitalization. From marketing perspective, what are your thoughts on this?
Where do I begin? I mean, there's a lot right now that I think is, and I'm writing an article, my latest newsletter will be going out, will be about this. So I'm like literally in the middle of really like looking into all this stuff. I think it can be good. And I think that wanting to replicate what Formula One has done is, let's be real. It's like everyone wants that, right? There isn't a scenario where I see Liberty Media saying like, this is a bad idea to try and have joint weekends. I do see a challenge though when it comes to things like, you know, how do you manage the sponsors? How do you manage the fan? Like there's different fans for each. How do you manage all that? How do you manage the partners, the different, really the, it's like you're looking at trying to take two different events and just mash them together, right? So the issue with that, or the challenge with having them under the same roof, so to speak, is it's like different formats. There's a lot of different things going on, and I'm sure there's a lot more that goes like to the actual event. You know, a MotoGP race is like 45 minutes, mm-hmm. right? And it could attract a younger audience in the U.S. where they're kind of missing some fans, but I don't know. How does that play in with, oh, you're going to have a feature 45-minute race, you know, MotoGP followed by this feature F1 race that could be, you know, two or more hours. All of the hoopla and the fan fest type stuff that goes on with, you know, Formula One, the spectacle of it. How do you balance that with this just new group showing up to the races right now? They're going to be there. Will they be there just for MotoGP? Will they want to watch Formula One? Maybe they are already, maybe there is a cross section of those folks already, which it'll be great for those folks. I don't know enough about how they can get the events together. Like, I don't know enough about like, oh, is there any safety issues they have to worry about? I would assume that, you know, FIA grade one tracks will be good enough for MotoGP, but well, I don't know. There's got to be other sort of safety issues or safety things you have to focus on and worry about. So from that perspective, like, I don't know. Will it happen? Maybe. There's definitely interest. It seems like there's, you know, Liberty Media, folks from Liberty Media and folks from MotoGP are saying like, yeah, we're definitely open to it. We're definitely considering it. So they're thinking about this, right? They're thinking about making this a big deal. I just, man, that just turns like, an F1 weekend is now, and it wouldn't be every weekend, right? It's not going to be every single weekend. It's going to be an F1/MotoGP weekend. It'll probably be more similar to what like an F1 Academy thing, where you've got a half a dozen that end up, you know, joint weekends, right? It's not going to be every race. You just, number one, you can't do it. You're not going to have MotoGP on the streets, so those circuits are out already. And I think right now the only track that they overlap on is Coda, right?
Yeah.
And Coda's next week for MotoGP. Yeah, I think marketing wise, it's fantastic for MotoGP because of what Liberty Media has done with Formula One. if you take just the sponsorship angle of it and the partners, right now, Formula One has almost a 50-50 split with the United States and then like everybody else that sponsors Formula One. If you look at MotoGP sponsors right now, you probably wouldn't even be able to guess who has the highest sponsors unless you read my tweet. Who has the most, what country has the most sponsors in MotoGP?
The US.
No, I'll give you one more guess.
Uzbekistan.
Oh, come on. Take a guess. Take a real guess. Unless you read the tweet and you already know the answer.
I haven't read the tweet. No.
Good.
Australia.
So Italy. Italy leads sponsors. Yeah. So Italy is the number one sponsor country in MotoGP. And it's quite significant. They literally have like four times the amount of sponsors as the next closest country, Japan. And that's where I think the Liberty Media leadership will come into play, is bringing in money from the U.S. It's hard to ignore the fact that the U.S. has the most money, which money keeps these sports running, right? This was one of the big arguments early on when this news was announced, is like, it's going to ruin the sport and this and that. And it's like, well, yeah, but if you want your sport to keep going, they need money to keep, you know, going. And partners and sponsors are the ones that ultimately allow us to enjoy our sports. Whether they make things better or worse, fine. But at the end of the day, without that, you know, influx of money, there's only so much fan spending can support, right? Like, fan spending is only going to support so much. And no one's donating their time, right? It's not like, it's not like anyone's going out there. There's no charity in these for-profit sports. So I think that's one major aspect where we will see Liberty Media make a change, is they'll probably start to attract more money from the U.S. Is that going to help immediately? I don't know. Like, it's hard to say where this is all going to go right away and how it'll affect things. But we see races, you know, for Formula One, we saw an expansion pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Look how quickly Formula One added Miami and Vegas.
Yeah.
Those are pretty quick. So in North America alone, you've got Texas, Vegas, you got Austin, Vegas, Miami, Mexico City, Montreal. That's all North America. So you've got, and then if you want it, like, if we include the Americas, you've also got Brazil, right? So there's, six races in the Americas, five in North America. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And could they do that for MotoGP, where it's like, we're going to bring races to maybe more of North America, get more money from these folks, help expand the global footprint, or help expand the footprint of the sport.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a, that ends up, you know, maybe the expansion of teams is a little bit like Trackhouse, which is a NASCAR team.
Yeah.
They purchased a MotoGP team. So they'll be entering into MotoGP. So there'll be an American team in MotoGP and an American team that understands marketing. Justin Marks at Trackhouse is fantastic. If, for those of you that don't know, the Trackhouse team is the NASCAR team that started Project 91. Project 91 brought Kimi Raikkonen to NASCAR to race. And then later on, Project 91 brought Shane Van Gisbergen to NASCAR from Australian Supercars. He raced on the streets of Chicago, won the race, and now he's actually joined, I believe, I'm 99% sure, he's joined NASCAR full time. That's freaking cool. And Van Gisbergen's huge in the supercars circuit as a sports car driver. He's, you know, it's massive. But Trackhouse is like, they are also part owned by Pitbull. There's a lot of appeal to Trackhouse. Right? So Trackhouse coming into MotoGP is really cool. And it's an American team. That'll be very, you know, a very big selling point. I'm sure there's a lot of excitement for it. I don't know how they're going to go about it. Are they going to run the exact same playbook as, you know, as Formula One? Maybe, you know, I could see it happening. I wouldn't be shocked if someone comes out and is like, I am shocked they ran the same playbook. Let's not fool ourselves. You might see the exact same playbook being run. We're seeing other motorsport series doing the same thing. You know, IndyCar with their 100 days to Indy. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's very similar, right? They're showing you the days leading up to the Indy 500. They're not even talking about the rest of the damn season. They're just talking about this one big race. Like, that's how big the Indy 500 is. NASCAR, with their series on Netflix, they focused on their playoff run, the playoff it was like the top six guys in the playoff last year. They featured, or four or six guys from the playoffs last year, they featured them in their series on Netflix. They've seen an uptick, five races in a row in viewership already. Mm-hmm. I mean, the playbook works. There's a reason why Drive to Survive and the whole marketing blitz that Liberty Media did with Formula One helped not just Formula One. And of course, you have the haters that say it didn't help Formula One. It helped all these motorsports,
yeah,
especially in the U.S. and in North America. And that's where I think we're going to see this rising tide raises all ships. If we can all play together and we all can, you know, bring better product to our fans, this helps everybody. This, yeah, is not going to be just good for one motorsport series. And we've talked about this, and I'll stop right here, and then I want to get your thoughts. But like, motorsport fans, pure, true, just motorsport fans, typically enjoy more than one series as it is, mm-hmm, right? It's like, if I'm going to watch this, I can either appreciate or I will enjoy another series as well as it is. I know me, like, I love cars. I can just sit there and listen. It doesn't matter what kind of race it is. I'll listen to it and watch cars go around. Like, I'm cool with that. But that's also a very specific form of like enjoying a sport or enjoying a series. Whereas, you know, basketball, football, NFL football, baseball, you have to really like be like, if you're into that, you might not be into another sport at all, right? Motorsports, like, you're into motorsports. So when people came over and started watching Formula One that were not motorsport fans, they kind of stopped, like, live and die right there, right? They're like, yeah, I'm into Formula One. Are you really? Tell me about the, well, you know, I like this. Maybe I don't like that. Or I'm here for the drivers. Cool, whatever. But they there's no more, like, deeper path. Now, I'm not saying that's the case for everybody. Where some sort of partnership like this with F1 and MotoGP, now you're exposing those people to multiple series. And you're saying, hey, look, there's two wheels, there's four wheels. These are the pinnacle sports of their type. And then eventually you start turning people onto more motorsports. And that's how I think this eventually plays out. Does Liberty Media start buying up more motorsports or partnering with more motorsports? Maybe, but I think that's ultimately what has to happen, is that you get people to really start enjoying different types of, and it actually would only help Liberty Media, right? Because, yeah, now if you've got someone who's like, oh, I love MotoGP and I love Formula One, Formula One's kind of having a season where it's been dominated by Max Verstappen, I'm gonna focus on MotoGP. That's a win for Liberty Media either way. Instead of like, F Formula One, it sucks, I'm not gonna watch it, I'm gonna turn it off and that's it, I'm done. Like, I'm not gonna watch any other motorsport now.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of that potential thought process in the boardroom right now.
Yeah. Well, I think obviously my mind turns into the logistics of all of this, because you already have all of their personnel working, not just with F1. They've got the support races too. They've got the Porsche series. There's F1 Academy. There's so many different support races, F2, etc. And like I said, you have the same crew basically working all of these races. And so you think, oh, F1 is only a couple of hours a day. True, when it comes to actually practicing and, you know, FP1, 2, 3, quali, and the race itself, you think, oh, these people are only working a few hours a day. What an easy job. That's not the case at all. They are literally up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 5 o'clock in the morning. You've got camera people, you've got presenters, you've got garage space. There's so many logistics that Liberty Media is really going to have to think about. How can we offer these support races? We can only do it on weekends where we've got maybe only one other support race, right? But does that necessarily open up to the right fan base where maybe they are interested in that area? And you can kind of tell by gathering data, like who's interested in what, right? So it, like I said, it increases the logistics concerns, because you've got to hire more camera operators. You have to hire more presenters. You have to hire just more security. There's so many more logistics that are going to go into a potential partnership, having MotoGP and F1 races at the same week. And I think that is the bigger thing that they're going to have to consider in all of this. Because again, if the objective here is to attract fans to a sport that they have just purchased majority ownership of, then they have to do it in a way that they know their market and they know that it's going to appeal to that market. Obviously that market would appeal to Austin, right? Because they already race in at Circuit of the Americas. They already know the track well, and it would, I think that would work, but that would also require them to basically say to F1 Academy or say Porsche, for example, we're going to have to omit one of you this weekend too, because we simply do not have the man hours. We do not have the garage space. We can't make this work. And at the same time, if you're MotoGP, maybe you're used to a garage, you're not going to accept having a tent city created to house your operation during a race week, right? So there's just a lot that's going to go into this. I don't know how successful this would be. And I think maybe if they would do it, they could only do a couple of races a year, which again, it definitely expand the viewership base. People would be exposed to a sport series that they wouldn't have been exposed to, which would be good for growth. But again, I think long-term sustainability, I see the logistics being too heavy for F1 to be able to kind of work through. But that's just me.
Yeah, I think the logistics is going to be the biggest deterrent.
Yeah.
Where I see this being maybe super successful is turn it into that one Super Bowl type race a year.
Yeah.
As opposed to, or you know, World Cup, whatever you want to call it, race per year, as opposed to make it special. The best weekend of the year ends up being, you know, the end of May, where you've got Monaco, you've got Indy, and you've got, you know, NASCAR runs their Coke 600. Like, you got these three races, like top series, running their epic races. I mean, Liberty could own their own epic thing with, like, you know, you've got Formula One, you've got MotoGP. They're not involved with it, but like, you throw a sail GP race in there, like you go everywhere, land, sea, air. I don't know. You do everything, and you make it this big weekend, right? And now that it would be, at least in my head, far more achievable. Mm-hmm. Even though it'd still be a big logistical thing, you're not trying to drag these logistics and do that every week or every couple weeks or twice a month, whatever it might be, all over the world.
Yeah.
So
it's
I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see what they do to it. But crossover events would be cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, Lewis Hamilton riding in MotoGP or something, like that would be cool. Or you have, like, I don't know if you've seen, like, there's usually in the NBA All-Star game, they always have like a celebrity All-Star game during that weekend. And so it's like a bunch of celebrities and whatever.
Yeah.
Artists, musicians, whoever, just celebrities that end up playing in a basketball game together. And sometimes there's like former basketball players that play in it, or, you know, older folks. And like that would be kind of cool. That. Imagine if you did that.
They did that for golf at the Las Vegas Grand Prix.
They did.
So
they did. And it was not a great success.
No.
But also it was only on Netflix. So it wasn't like part, it didn't feel as like part of everything, but it was a step in the right direction. Here's something different, here's something fun.
Yeah.
I know, again, purists are gonna hate it, but whatever. The crossover purists thing I could see happening though. But I could totally see a crossover work in the motorsport world, you know, differently than like, oh, let's go play golf. How about like, hey Lewis, you're gonna drive an F1 a MotoGP bike, and someone else is gonna go and drive, you know, Mark Marquez, whatever, go drive a Formula One car. Now, these guys can do it. We've seen like Valentino Rossi, he can do it. Lewis Hamilton is very capable of doing whatever he wants to do. Like, these guys are capable of doing other things. It'd be fun to watch it as part of a weekend. I'm not saying it's going to increase the
viewership
season. It's not going to, the pure, you know, purists are going to be like, oh, this is, but it makes the crossover work. At least in my opinion, more so than just like, all right, we're going to have a crossover weekend. It's just like, we're going to run MotoGP the same time as a Formula One, or like, you know, back to back with Formula One race. It's like, eh, okay.
Yeah.
To me, that's less exciting than doing a crossover where you've got, yes, you have that, the back to back racing, but then you also have crossover events happening that week. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it turns into an entire week. Maybe it turns into a 4-day weekend instead of a, you know, 3-day weekend. Whatever it is, I think there are opportunities to increase it. Look, they're already, like, listen, Formula One, you're already trying to get rid of practice sessions anyway. Mm-hmm. You're trying to go to sprint formats with, you know, so whatever. I mean, I think practice sessions are very important, but I'm saying if that's what they're doing anyway, then what's a one crossover session going to do for you? Like, it's not going to hurt.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, it also in the cap era, it means that you're less likely to fuck your car up during a practice session.
It is. It definitely. I mean, listen, once you've qualified, like, do you really want to run another practice session? Yeah. No, you're just going to go, you know, that's why we have our sprint races and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, once you've qualified, you're good.
There's definitely a lot that can be done with all of this. I think, like I said, from my perspective, it's just the logistics. If they can figure out the logistics, I can absolutely see something like this working. You know, you say land, sea, air. I'm also looking at it in terms of, okay, what can we do? And what places would be the most conducive to this, not just in terms of where the racing would be good, but where tourism would also be good, where they have enough hospitality, they have enough hotels, there's enough drivers, there's enough restaurants, like the city can actually support an influx of that many fans. I think a place like Austin, I'm not just saying this because I'm a resident here, I think that would be a perfect location because, and I'm honestly looking towards what Red Bull does with their stunts and their crazy shit. I think Austin would provide the perfect backdrop for something like that to happen, where people are looking for extreme sports. You can make that happen here. You can absolutely send squirrel suits down Lady Bird, and have this crazy spectacle of event happening there, fireworks, etc. Where then you've got MotoGP happening and Formula One happening, and there's so much that could happen in 1 week in Austin if they can logistically make it work. I'm getting excited thinking about that.
Listen, Austin would be a great spot for it. I'm with you. Yeah. And like you said, there's also, I mean, there's the fact they both run at that circuit already anyway. So it's made for it. And it's a great track. I think there's good racing there. There's general consensus. It's a good race, right? Like, it's not, at least for Formula One. I'm not super familiar. I'm not very familiar with the MotoGP at COTA, but I mean, I don't hear a lot of complaints about COTA. I don't hear many, if at all, but I'm sure they're there. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that would be the perfect opportunity.
Well, we shall see what happens.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see. Hopefully we'll see a good race this evening or tomorrow morning, wherever you're watching from, with the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka. Max Verstappen starts from pole position. Yeah, yet again. It's just become the norm. We had Ham Verbot, now we have Verperlek most of the time, although Leclerc just could not qualify today, so that didn't help. But on that note, we will be with you again next week, or within the next couple weeks before the next race. We are going to the Chinese Grand Prix, first time there since 2019, but we'll be back in Shanghai. That'll be cool. Any other parting thoughts from you?
Go sports.
With that, we will see you on the next one. Ciao.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.